For more about 702, go to 702.co.za.
Good morning to you, Bongi.
Good morning, Jane, and good morning to your listeners.
Thank you for joining us to chat about this. I mean, you know, you raised the question about state preparedness for such a disaster, and it seems, from what we'd seen, that there was very little preparation. I mean, how can you prepare for what we saw?
Thank you for the opportunity, Jane. I just want to start by, conveying our condolences to the families that were affected and the people of Malawi. Mm. Like you rightly said, the storm caused untold devastation. It was a huge catastrophe. And whilst we're looking at all the logistical and administrative issues related to the response, which I'll speak to in a minute, I think it's well worth just pointing out that what we're seeing now is a huge violation of people's human rights, the human rights of the people of Malawi. And I say this because I think we had the storm coming for a while. We had the cyclone coming for a while. For at least 35 days, we were told about Cyclone Freddy. Cyclone Freddy had caused, fatalities in Madagascar, fatalities in Mozambique. And yet, when you look at what's happening on the ground right now with Malawi, very little by way of disaster preparedness was put in place. So, So you would have expected that you would have any emergency housing, emergency shelter already prepared with the necessary potable water, the necessary sanitation facilities. Beyond that, you would have expected that there would be preparation by way of medical supplies, emergency relief aid, food parcels, and all of that. And yet, what we're seeing is that the people that were impacted cannot even be reached by some of these services and supplies because the roads were damaged, some of the bridges were swept away, by the floods. And what we're getting is that these people are just difficult to reach. So we are saying this is a huge failure on the government of Malawi. It's a huge failure to anticipate and mitigate the risk that everybody saw coming for an extended period of time.
And Bogi, you got to ask why. I mean, they knew it was going to be bad. Do you think that it was the inability to comprehend that it could be as vicious, as violent as it was, or clearly there's no will? Is it a financial problem? What is it?
I think it's probably a combination of all of those things, Jenny. And what to do, for the ordinary people, initially they were given the option. Some of them were given the option to be moved. But a lot of them declined the offers because often when these things happen, people sort of hope for the best. But that's no excuse for the government not to put in mitigation measures in place. So what we're seeing now is that there's no access to potable water. Some of the partners that we support in Malawi have said, there's humanitarian aid organizations that have put water points, but they don't have containers to fetch that water. So something as simple as making sure that in the villages where there was anticipated a risk, they could have put water containers to manage the situation. There's very little toilet, sanitation facilities. We're only now trying to get food into the affected areas, into where people are cramped in camps. And what we're seeing in those camps is that the level of violence, especially sexual violence against women, is also, we're getting a lot of reports of sexual violence against women. We don't have any medical supplies, sanitary supplies, menstrual provisions. So it's actually a huge catastrophe.
Excuse me jumping in here, Bongi. You see it in so many parts of the world, right? I mean, issues whether people are fleeing countries, what's happening in Bangladesh, for example, and they get to these camps and it's just a picking ground for people who want to take advantage. There's child snatching, there's sexual harassment. So, I mean, for those victims of this natural disaster, it's something that just, for them, gets worse.
It's just unending because these people have no housing, they have no clothing because they've lost, their clothing. And so even just by way of physical protection, physical barriers, from sexual predators, that is also compromised. But, the sad thing in Malawi is that as in the aftermath of the storm, people are trying to bury their dead. Some people are still missing. They're looking for them. And as they continue with those kind of efforts, still there's more mudslides. Because, of course, when you're trying to bury your dead, you're digging and you're loosening the ground. And so even more people, continue to be impacted. And the government says that they cannot reach some of those areas. And they didn't have any air lifting facilities available. So you want to ask the question why. Mm. But I think, the lesson, the big lesson, Jane, actually is for other countries. I mean, Malawi's got a catastrophe right now, but we must, use the Malawi experience to learn something, Scientists have been telling us and continue to tell us that we must expect greater frequency in these storms, greater intensity even. So what are we doing, to protect, to make sure that we are ready for these kind of disasters and that we can intervene and save people's lives?
Mm. I mean, in November last year, nations agreed to compensate countries affected by extreme weather, exacerbated by the human-caused climate change. I mean, we know that cyclones are wetter, they're more frequent, they're more intense. I mean, is it time now for developed countries, countries with money to get involved in helping countries like Malawi, for example, which has minimal impact on climate change compared to the more industrialized nations?
And that's what makes it a social justice matter. The fact that Malawi is suffering today for having contributed very little, by way of greenhouse emission. But I think where we need to start, Jane, is also to look at our own, climate action conversations. Because a lot of these conversations are happening in conferences. Very little conversation about climate change, climate action is happening with villagers and communities who are likely to be the most affected. So we need to start looking at ways we can identify vulnerable communities. We need to engage all the citizens about climate action and what justice looks like, because there's a lot of indigenous knowledge amongst people about how people have navigated, extreme weather conditions, and yet we pretend that the solutions will come from outside of these communities. There's a lot that these communities know about water harvesting, about mitigation, about and given the enough support and resources, they can contribute a lot more meaningfully with indigenous knowledge around how we navigate climate action in our country.
Mm. And it's something that we need to look at here. I mean, we saw the floods, the impact of climate change on our country, the lack of resources, making people more and increasingly vulnerable. What can we learn?
We need to be engaging South African citizens, especially those in the more likely to be affected areas. We must have the voice and choice of citizens. And their ability to contribute to the climate action plan. We must be looking at groups that are likely to be disproportionately affected. We know that women and children tend to be disproportionately affected and impacted in this kind of situations. We need to be looking at, what resources can already be put out there, because we want more preventative measures put in place. So there's a lot that we can do and learn from the Malawi experience and learn from our own experience with the floods in KZN now. And yet very little is happening across the continent, actually, around, the conversation and later on putting practical measures in place.
I'm speaking to social justice expert Bongi Ndondo about what we've just seen happen in Malawi and Madagascar and Mozambique and the human rights issues that are elicited after something like this, which is incredibly sad and frightening, and we've seen it happen time and time again. And Bongi, I'm just wondering what your conversations are with governments. I mean, what is it that they say is missing? What is it that they say they need?
I think government will always tend to point to the fiscus and, you know, financing challenges, but I don't think we must let governments get away with that. And often they are very reactive. The government of Malawi has declared a state of emergency or a national state of disaster. I mean, this is after the fact, you know. This is after the fact. A lot more needs to be done up front, you know, way of preparedness. And we've got a lot of humanitarian aid organizations that have been in disaster situations, and they know the kind of measures that can be put in place. So it's not like this is, you know, we're building from scratch. There's a lot of there's a lot we know about what can be done beforehand, but that's actually not happening. But I think we must also be engaging a lot more with citizens, because I don't think it's organizations like ours that should be engaging in government around these sort of issues. We must be empowering you know, ordinary people to have these conversations so that they can participate in some of these you know, discourses around what happens you know, when there's risk coming through, because government is going to hide behind the finger and say we warn people to relocate. But that's not good enough. It's also people's choice not to relocate. And that doesn't mean that if they opt not to relocate, and remember, they're also relocating to these, you know, very poorly resourced emergency centers. So who would give up their home to go into a poorly resourced emergency center with no real, you know, material support provided? Mm. So we must be empowering citizens more and more to have this conversation.
We must. Bongi Ndondo, I appreciate you talking to us. It is a fascinating topic, and it's one I suspect that we need to return to. Thank you.